Exactly. So welcome back. Well, I guess nobody heard the first episode. So welcome to Podatog, a weird little Magic the Gathering podcast about weird little guys.
It's a Magic the Gathering podcast for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. When you're Magic the Gathering, your magic and gathering with the little guys.
Whether that is in Standard or Commander or in cubed formats, you have put together a cube, right?
I am learning how to cube right now. I've played a little bit of cube. I really, 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 really want to call the pile of cards that I have curated a cube. It's a themed pile.
Relatively themed. Yeah.
Deeply themed. I mean, it's Bloomburrow. I'm thinking of it less. It's a cube, but it's more like a Bloomburrow board game.
Okay. Like Bloomburrow expanded.
Yeah.
Okay. I love that. I've kind of been low key thinking about doing a cube because you are at, you publicly announced it, right? That you're going to be at.
I will be at KubeCon. You can come hang out with me. It's going to be pretty sick. That's what, October, the weekend of October 20th?
Yeah, it's like the 17th through the 20th, I think. I really actually kind of want to try and go because I've never done a cube draft. And this seems like something that my local LGS stores aren't really going to do anything like that. And I think that it just sounds like so fun. I'd really love to get a vintage cube draft, like just ton of vintage cards. And honestly, if I can't find one, because what's the like lowest low end for a cube is like what, 700 cards?
Oh, no. You can do a 180 card pile.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So
I could easily
do a vintage cube.
Like since learning about KubeCon and getting kind of involved in this, I have been doing like a lot of studying into cubes. Like my very limited experience is one Pauper draft, which was also the first time that I had ever drafted. So I was like, I know red and blue spells go good together sometimes. It certainly was a pile.
I love that though. I just bought a bunch of, because I think last time we talked, I had bought a bunch of vintage cards. And this time, I bought it was like probably 60, 80 cards. It was another lot of cards, but they were all Ice Age themed. And they were all uncommons minimum. Because most of the other ones I got are just like commons and just kind of garbage.
Yeah.
But there's like some actually kind of good shit that I'm like, okay, I gotta put this in a commander deck. I gotta like play with this. These are fun, weird cards.
I guess okay, that's actually reminding me. So I do have a little bit of experience building a cube, but like we're using the term very loosely. But for a little bit, one of my partners and I had this thing that we just called Abzan Kitchen Table. So it was just a bunch of our like cool, kind of synergistically selected shit in green, black, or white that we would basically take turns drafting cards off the top of it until we built something kind of functional. Because it's like, sometimes you get cards that it's like, oh, I want to run this guy. I want to find a home for this thing.
No, and that's like the way I'm feeling. Even if it is just like, I don't know, we spent a while last time talking about, in a thing that nobody will ever hear, but talking about how there's so many weird creatures and stuff that just doesn't make sense to run it in like a modern commander format. It doesn't make sense to run like a four drop that is like 2/3 with, flying or something, as just it's been so power crept by the current state of the game. But if you were to just be playing those cards, which seems like the perfect use case for something like,
I think you'd get a kick out of this proposed cube that I saw on Twitter, I think last night. But it was like, what if there's a cube that I could consistently draft while stoned and be able to make something functional?
Yep, perfect.
And so it's all like, it's all like OG vanilla creatures or like, it's a 4-mana 2/1 with flying. But it's just like the very straightforward, like, what if we slowed Commander down what if we slowed Magic down by like 15, 20 minutes? And I think that's a really cute idea. There is a cube that I saw a while ago that I'm obsessed with. And it's it had a really cute and clever name. I do not recall what it was, but it was this like, oops, all ornithopters. So it was like a 300 card cube.
Oh my God. And everything cards, was just like
100 cards were ornithopters. Tokens. It was ornithopters and equipment and enchantments.
Hell yeah.
And so it was just like, it was like battle bots in the air. It was sick as hell. And what's fun about Cube is it runs on like draft rules. So like, you can draft more than four of a card for your limited deck. So like, you can have like, in your, what, 24 card pile, 23, 24 card pile, you can have like 20 ornithopters, occasionally something to do with them.
That, no, and that like, it's that kind of, like those kind of weird tangents that is like, okay, well, you can do it. It almost reminds me of building a commander deck, because I love building a commander deck around a flavor or a theme.
Yeah.
As opposed to, because there are some people out there who they build a commander around like mechanics. Like there was one deck I played against that was just, oh, I got one game in at an LGS this last week. And usually when I go to a commander night, it's you get two, maybe three games in, because it's probably a good game is like an hour or so.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
One you're game running took the entire night because the dude had a milling deck, and every time his turn came around, it was milling something. It was a very unfun deck, right?
Oh my God.
But that was an example of like, okay, that every card in there, it was not like thematically cohesive. It was just every card was mechanically meant to do a thing.
What was the commander?
Oh God, I don't even remember. It wasn't, here's the thing. It wasn't anything that crazy. It was just like whenever somebody mills a card, you get control of it. It might've been actually a dual commander. I think it might've been a partner.
Okay. So my toxic trait is I love every mechanic that makes people pissed off. Like I think like if you're running a mill at a commander table, like you're insane in the best ways.
He did ask at the beginning, do you want to do a mill deck? And I, in my folly, was like, yeah, sure, because I was running a Golgari, like to work with I have basically a Gorgon tribal deck that I'm trying to kind of sort out the kinks on, and I'm like, oh yeah, this isn't a problem for me.
Yeah.
And it was a problem, because when he was talking about milling, he was talking about like, okay, like milling up to, you know, sometimes 20 cards at a time. And I actually felt bad because there was this really nice couple that came to play together, it was a guy and a girl, and the girl was actually a little bit newer at Commander, and
she got slammed into Mill City. Oh
yeah. And so I kind of like tried to ally with her and help her out a little bit, because it was just, oh, it's interminable. But yeah, I don't even remember why I brought that up, but I just wanted to talk about this game that I've had to, I've just,
well, oh. It's okay. But like, I think that's one of the double-edged swords of like Commander as a format, is it's like, if everyone's building around cards they like, what happens when the cards that you like are fucking evil? A friend of mine played against a Marlin the Mournsong deck the other day. You familiar with that?
I'm not. I'm looking it up right now.
So yeah, it's a Lorwyn Elf that says, players can't draw cards. At the beginning of each player's draw step, they lose three life. Searches their library for a card, ooh, puts it into their hand, then shuffles their library.
Yeah, like
that card is the reason why I played Darksteel Mutation.
Oh my God. See, that
like
that
like
would piss me off. Like that is exactly the kind of just slowing the game to a fucking crawl. Here's the thing. Something like that can be super fun if you're playing with like a group of friends, right? And everybody can chill and laugh about it. But when it was, especially in the thing I felt bad for, when it was like a new player that is still trying to come to terms with the rules, and every turn you're just kind of tapping her and being like, okay, mill 10. Okay, mill 10. And yeah, it feels like that's not fun for a new player, I think, too.
I think there's decks that you play at a local game store. And then there's decks that you play to piss off your friend who did something really terrible to you one time. And never should those two cross.
Entirely fair.
If I'm going to play at a table full of randos, it's usually if I'm just going to jam and kind of be a problem and don't want to have a huge conversation about what deck I'm going to run, it's Jettmere always.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that paints the biggest fucking target on my back because it's Jettmere, but I'm kind of fine signing up for that. And it's very if I'm playing a deck that I think is going to be very mean for the table, I will intentionally play it a little bit suboptimally. If that's just what the vibe is. I think a lot of local game stores are just if you're going to Commander Night, we're playing beer and pizza Commander. We're not
exactly not playing not tournament Commander.
Yeah.
Well, and I think there's also because everybody, Commander decks, everybody's Commander decks are full of rares and mythics and cards like Hex and Blasphemous Act. And thankfully I managed to get a little bit of something out because I had a Nev's disc. And my
good.
And my which it's just it's full of board wipes, and that's also part of the state of the game is that okay, this person did a thing and they have 200 tokens now. Do we have a board wipe? If not, do we want to just shuffle up and play the next?
Yeah,
I get it. There is a level of not even frustration, but there is a level of accepting that hey, weird dumb shit's gonna pop off. But I think there's also sometimes when it pops off and it doesn't stop popping off, and it was my fault a little bit because I need to actually just had I don't remember what the Ice Age card was, but I was ooh, I need to put that in my deck for card draw because I've been swapping around one copy of Phyrexian Arena between my three commander decks because it's just it's one of the few black card draws enchantments, and I need more stuff like that, I feel.
Right. At some point, you're just going to deal with the fact that the board's going to get wrathed a couple of times and that's going to slow the game down. And I do think that we all need to be better about running wraths, even if it's kind of mean.
And that's some of the funniest shit though. And everybody kind of sees it coming. That's another thing that you take in stride. It's I finally got my commander out. I got, a planeswalker out. It's looking up. And then somebody is here's, Blasphemous Act. Here's murder. Here's whatever.
My favorite is Hour of Reckoning. So I run this in my Phyrexian Infect deck. It's a 4/3 white pip convoke spell. And so I can truly have it all. I can make a shitload of mites and then let them pay for the Hour of Reckoning. Oh, blow shit up and be like, all right, you guys got a turn.
That's dirty business.
I'm an asshole player.
But I admire and that's a level that I actually admire of okay, now you are turning the tide. There is a specific thing to do there, but also there are ways to prevent that. Somebody, if somebody's playing blue, they could have some kind of counterspell. They could have a bunch of other stuff. Whenever a creature dies, you earn that. There's so many things they can have to respond to that too.
Yeah, if someone has any aristocrats piece on board for most of my decks, I'm you're gonna stop me from doing my favorite things because that's going to kill me before I can kill all of you.
Well, do we want to get into the kind of main thrust of this week, what all the big hullabaloos about? Because, well, there's two real stories, right? There's the CEDH stuff and then Duskmourne spoilers.
Duskmourne spoilers. Let's start light and talk about Duskmourne spoilers because
fair.
I have so many thoughts and feelings and I would like to just say at the head of this, I'm probably going to be complaining about a lot of the art direction. None of these complaints are directed at the literal art directors of the cards, nor any of the artists who worked on these cards. I think in a vacuum, everything looks at least fine on a strictly like on a technical level, right?
I think there's a lot of stuff in here that is like great. Like I think it's you know, I'm with you though, because I think for almost everything that I look at and I'm like, okay, yes, love this. There is two cards I feel where the aesthetic is just not what I want.
It's just not quite it. And it's weird because like, okay, so I'm looking at Scryfall right now and some of it's really, really, really working for me. Even some of the stuff that I would say isn't like exactly the vibe. But I think a lot of the, for example, like non-human creatures, almost all of those work.
Yeah, I think they hit like this kind of middle ground. I watched a video where somebody was bringing it up. It's not quite, you know, some of the other horror themed worlds that they've done before, where you could say like Phyrexia or Innistrad, like it is kind of hitting its own thing.
Yeah. And I think that's like definitely what it wants to be doing. It wants to go for Haunted House, but then like what that's almost like too broad of a brief.
Yeah.
Because it's like, okay, so are we going for like Haunted House full of ghosts and ghoulies, Haunted House that's like a zombie thing, demons, or like what kind of
like there's stuff that I'm looking at, like the art for Comeback Wrong, and
yeah,
like that looks like it could have been in the Evil Dead Secret Lair.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah,
there's stuff in here that I'm like, okay, this is like really Hellraiser, but then there's stuff that is just straight up Ghostbusters. And it's like, what is the kind of tone that you're trying to hit in between there? Because I think a lot of people, the first thing, their automatic assumption when they saw a lot of the branding and a lot of like the boxes and stuff that were very, you know, retro cathode ray tube VHS analog horror, they're like, oh, okay, it's like Stranger Things. And I think it's not, I mean, like, it's not that, but I think it doesn't that much.
It doesn't take that much outside of a couple cards, but yeah, no, for the most part, it does avoid being like super egregious with the, it's just oops, all 80s. And I think like there's some of those cards I'm kind of down for a little bit more. Like I think Cursed Recording isn't.
Oh yeah, I think
like,
Cursed Recording looks cool as hell.
Like that's part of the thing though, it's like some of it I'm like, I don't know if this looks like a magic card, I don't know if it doesn't, it's sick as fuck.
Like, well, Cursed Recording is the one that it's black and white but you can turn it to color, right?
No, Cursed Recording's the artifact that's whenever you cast an instant or sorcery, put a time counter on it, and then if there's seven or
okay,
more time
yep,
counters
yep,
on it
okay
it's the also it, very it's good. The one that's like the stack of TVs. No, but oh my god, that Mana Rock that you can turn it, like oscillate between being a black and white TV or a color TV.
Yeah. So like the flavor
that's
there,
so
that's good
fun.
Shit. I'm into it. Way into it.
That's like a really interesting like mana fixing. The mana fixing in this set, I'm like, especially compared to Bloomborough, is like really dope. Oh my god, but then it's Acrobatic Cheerleader.
Yeah, I've that's like the first card up on Scryfall. I know you have thoughts about her.
It confuses me. So like, hi, I'm into magic, not just for the card game, but like for the lore. I think it's fun. And I really liked the world that Duskmourn like painted. But one of the key tenets of it was like, once we got into the world, it seems like this had been happening for a long time. Like it had been a very long time since Vel'Koth like took over and ate the world and encased everything in this haunted house. And so it's really jarring seeing a creature whose flavor text seems to imply that she used to very recently be in school. And it's like her art direction is like, it's a very clean cheerleading uniform.
It's not like kind of post-apocalyptic or like a resistance fighter like you would think.
You would think that's right, that's in this space. And so it's just like, My first thought is like she feels like she would have been in like the Unfinity.
Oh, absolutely.
Like
yeah.
And that's just like kind of perplexing. And like, I don't know. I don't, this is maybe just like a personal bugaboo. I don't love non-named human survivors. Like I don't like not the non-legendary human survivor as an idea, just because it's like, I feel like, or like the human, yeah, like human survivors, it's like, this is a bad place that I don't think anyone's doing super good in. Like, I want there to like be some flavor to it. Okay, so like I am realizing in real time, I don't hate the art direction of this set. I think as much as like some of its more vocal detractors.
When it first came out, or when there were teasers and stuff a couple months ago, I think it made a worse impression by front loading some of the more Ghostbusters-y, Stranger Things yeah. looking stuff. And yeah. now that, you know, I'm just looking at stuff, I'm like Doomsday Excruciator, Demonic Council, like this is stuff, these look like magic ass magic cards. Like if I was going through a bulk bin, I would have to check the icon to see what set it was from, because it's not necessarily like, oh, okay, that was from, you know, Kaladesh or some shit.
Yeah, like I mean, I think there is like a unified enough aesthetic across them that like especially in the backgrounds, I do think that those are nailing it pretty hard, where it's like you have this like, I'm looking at Head Shredder, where it's like, you know, you're walking along this goofy like creepy forest path, and then in the background there's this like chandelier hanging in the background. Like that's really, really fun. And even like the weird, like the non-standard frames, I think like the CRT frames, they feel very Secret Lair-y, but they don't feel like, that doesn't feel bad.
No, I've kind of been locked in on the showcase frames since day one. I thought they always looked kind of sick. And that's like, so here's the thing, is that this has always, not only because I love analog VHS horror and stuff, but I think more than other people, I don't necessarily mind the divergent styles of modern magic, where yeah. I think a lot of people get very precious about like, okay, this doesn't fit magic. And I know where that's coming from. Here's the thing. I think magic is a wider sandbox than people give it credit for.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think that Wizards is also still trying to cram it full of too much stuff.
I would fully agree with both of those. Like, I think that like, and it's just, it's really jarring, I think, to go from Bloomborough to this.
And honestly, I'm not mad at that transition even.
I think it's whiplashy for me.
This comes back to a larger problem I have, is like, I wish Bloomborough got a full like set block.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like I wouldn't mind all of these like super divergent aesthetics if we spent more than one set release on most of them. Like, I think
it's really jumping, because what this year has been, we started with Karlov Banner and then went to Thunder Junction and then Bloomborough and then this. And it really, you know, compare that to like almost any other year with themed sets, and like it does. It feels like this weird like multiverse sampler platter in a way where none of it really sticks when it comes to lore or aesthetics.
Yeah, no, like especially like comparing the last 2 years, at least, like, so we went from we had Dominaria United that led into, oh shoot, did that go? Yeah, because 22 ended with the Brothers War, and that went right into All Be One, the Phyrexia set that led into March of Machine, which like kind of cohesively at least felt like almost a block.
Yeah, it was at least tangentially related. Like there was an overarching narrative here. And it's like, I don't get that now. Like I think Thunder Junction was the closest I felt to that, where, you know, there was, okay, there's Jace, there's Oko, there's Vraska, like there are characters and stuff, you know, they're doing stuff. But then where are they in Bloomborough? Like, Raoul was in Bloomborough.
Yeah, Raoul's there. He's hunting Jace, which I think is... I think that Raoul hating Jace so much that he got turned into an otter is very funny. But yeah, like, it's a little bit more disparate. And, like, in Duskmourne, like, that's kind of a similar thing. Duskmourne, I almost wish would have happened closer to March of Machine based on the story. By which I mean to say, like, it really centers around Tamio's adopted rat son being, like, called out by her ghost to, like, going into Duskmourne. And, like, that's the whole reason we're here, is this kid, this funny little rat man, opened a door and then disappeared. And it's like, okay, cool. So we have, like, characters dealing with death. We have this, like, thing that feels like it might be kind of connected to, like, the Phyrexian invasion with, like, these, like, the multiverse is all split up. Like, there's parts that are kind of working for me there.
But you got to wonder, like, okay, when is this stuff going to, is it working towards anything? When is it going to come together? Or is it just, like, more, because the next set after this, because it's Foundations after this.
Yeah.
And then I believe Innistrad Remastered. As hesitant as I know a lot of people are about this one, I feel that one is going to be, like that is something I look at and I'm like, okay, that should be an Infinity or Unfinity 2. That should be an unset.
I'm curious how they're going to do it, because I remember when they initially pitched it, it sounded more Mad Max, like, Death Race type thing.
And honestly, I could kind of see it being like a more post-apocalyptic-y.
Yeah.
I think a post-apocalypse, I think, kind of fits with some of the stuff that Magic has done, for sure.
Yes. And if we go in that direction, or, like, this is very much just more of, like, a pet hope for me. I would love for it to, like, if they lean in, if they go NASCAR instead of Mad Max, then go all in and let this be, like, Battle Bond 2. Just if I can draft a Battle Bond set, I'm happy as a clam. Like, I will accept and deal with whatever's going on. But, like make it the fact that it's, like, oh, yeah, no, like, this is just for... We're punching each other for shits and giggles. Like, we're not going for... Like, the glory's in winning. The glory's not in world domination. Which, like, so the end of Duskmourne is going to sound like a bunch of nonsense. But also, I'm like, oh, geez. Oh, I can understand maybe internally, like, why Wizards might have wanted to, like, and then the next set's going to be a lighter note.
Okay. I guess I can see that.
Just mostly based on Vel'Koth has loot, and that doesn't seem like a good thing. That seems like a very bad thing for the multiverse.
Do you think they are positioning Vel'Koth as, like, a new kind of, not even like Elish Norn, but like a new villain in permanence, like something that will be in this story going forward?
My absolute fringe theory is that Vel'Koth is literally Yawgmoth. Vel'Koth is this kind of, in, like, Yawgmoth has been amassing power and, like, is, like, super dead but not, and, like, the Phyrexian invasion kind of, like, reinvigorated his essence into this, like, greater world swallowing being.
See, like, there's something about the story, like, that background aspect I love. Like, I think is so cool for a entire world of inescapable horror, I think is so neat. Yeah.
I mean, granted, this pet theory is based entirely on the fact that his name is Yawgmoth. And like, the art design, I'm like, that doesn't not look very Phyrexian-y.
Yeah, there is definitely, like, they have some commonalities with, like, Giger.
They're just Giger, but, like, but yeah, I mean, if we're setting up Vel'Koth to be, like, because, I mean, if he's a replacement big bad, awesome. I love a good big bad. And the way that So what's terrifying about him having access to Loot is he's got access to the map of the multiverse that's in Loot's head. And if like he's able to open all of these different doors into Duskmourne, and I'm like, okay, so is New Phyrexia inaccessible to him? Who's to say? Is Nicol Bolas inaccessible to him? Who's to say?
Or what does it look like when like the Phyrexian incursion goes up against this kind of world swallowing entity?
Yeah, like what if we have like
what kind of fucked up monsters would that create?
Yeah, like there's, I think that it's positioning like I'm a big fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of like a good haunting big bad. And I think that Valgavoth has been set up. We didn't get a lot of him in the story, but what we did get, I'm like, oh, I'm so glad you were not only not easily defeated, but like everyone just kind of ran away. You're like a capital T threat. Let's go. Like the Wanderer could kind of hang a little bit, but like, no. And I mean, whatever happened, he somehow managed to separate Loot from Jason Vraska. Jace is going to do something stupid to get his furry little son back. I'm stoked.
So really quick, do we want to go into some of your favorite cards or the things that you're most looking forward to cracking up and being able to play with from this set? Because there are a lot of...
Okay,
spoilers out.
So, okay, this card just dropped last night, but something that I'm really, 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 really stoked about, specifically for, like, Limited. I love Self-Mill. I love Graveyard Recursion. I love my pet standard deck right now is an Iridescent Vine Lasher Landfall combo.
Hell yeah.
And we got two pieces of tech for it revealed yesterday that I think I'm going to try. We got three pieces of tech. One of them I really want to try. And then the other two, I'm like, if this works, that could be incredible. And so we'll start with the obvious tech that I think everyone and their grandma who even remotely likes Mill, be it Self or otherwise, is going to be obsessed with Head Shredder. Which is a 2/2 green pips, a 5/5 vehicle that whenever it attacks, you may mill two cards. And more importantly, whenever one or more land cards are put into your graveyard from your library, put them onto the battlefield tap.
Like that is the kind of thing that if you put, like if you're going up against somebody with a mill machine, or even if you have a ton of milling in your deck, like that's just unlimited mana.
Yeah, yeah. And if, for me, it's land ETBs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. there aren't a whole lot of landfall in this set, is there?
I have not seen any landfall thus far. It's not a super commonly...
No, like Vinelasher was one of the only ones in
I think Vinelasher was the only Bloomborough landfall. Yeah. But so the other pieces of tech are more deeply my jank. Slash such cute flavor on several levels, but it's the cards Say Its Name and Altanach the Thrice Called.
The Thrice Called. That is such a I don't know if I'll be able if I get that card and the Say Its Name, three of those in a sealed or in a draft, I'm going to play that.
I'm Say Its Name is some fucking Yu-Gi-Oh tech. I love it. Like
it's so flavorful. It's just delicious.
It's so flavorful. And one of the things that my Vinelasher deck has a hard time with is like closing out late game. If I'm missing combo pieces, like just how do I get damage in? Altanach the Thrice Called is a 9/9 trampler, and that's a great way to do it. I think that these are just so fun. And I also just really, 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 really always deeply appreciate a legendary creature that wouldn't really work as a commander.
And, you know, it's a 7-drop for 9/9 with trample. And that's like, that's not
bad. That's cool.
But it's... being able to get that for, you know, six from three previous turns while also milling cards.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's so weird. Cool. It's a cool. Perfect balance of like risk and reward, like having to pay, but also getting something really good if it all pays off, which I'm like a big fan of.
And it being like you can run it as a one of, because you search everywhere for it. I think that's so fun. Like if you, no matter where you call it,
oh,
it comes,
you do.
Yeah. I think that's just some brilliant, beautiful design.
Yeah. That one I'm super, I think is going to be really fun. What was the other one? There was another legendary. Screaming Nemesis is going to be interesting to see. The one where if it deals damage to a player, they can't gain life for the rest of the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is, I am sure that is not going to make any waves in any kind of Commander games ever.
Definitely. No, I'm curious how that's going to affect mono red aggro as well, especially the current standard. Just because, like, one of the best ways of dealing with aggro is like stabilizing through, right.
Like just tanking it.
Yeah. Like, cause you can tank it down to like five and then stabilize and you're fine. And you'll incrementally get a little bit back and all that. But yes.
Yeah, like, God, it's, you can get that out. It's like, it's so low cost too. It's haste. So you can get that out. You know, if you're lucky, basic level, you look at that and you're like, okay, turn three, you could get that out, but you could get it out even earlier. And then with haste in this, just boom. Okay. You cannot gain life for the rest of the game.
Yeah. Well, no, you're not blocking it. If you block it, you're not gaining life.
Yeah.
And so just a hasty 3-3 coming at you. And I mean, like, we would be amiss to not name, he's been long revealed, but I need Doomsday Excruciator in every black deck.
That boy is going right into my Demon Angel deck I'm trying to make.
It's going into my Crick Son of Yawgmoth.
Oh, that'll be fun. Like, honestly, though, I think that's kind of fun. Like, it's fucked up, but I think it's fucked up in a fun way.
It's fucked up in a fun way until I cast this and then the next turn cast Dark Deal.
Oh, yeah.
And then kill everyone. We're also getting Demonic Tutor into Standard, kind of.
I just noticed Doomsday Excruciator is not even Mythic. It's just Rare.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. No, I'm... Oh, I love when they print cards just for me.
I really like, speaking of Mythics, Meat Hook Massacre 2, which is like incredibly, if you ever get it out, it would be late game. It doesn't seem optimal in any way, but it seems very fun.
I love that it's literally twice the cost of Meat Hook Massacre.
Yeah. It, like, again, really good flavor there with having like a sequel.
Yeah. It's the bigger and dumber sequel to Meat Hook Massacre, and they really didn't want to have to ban this one, and I love that for them.
Oh, what do you think of, because one of the kind of, like, I know they've had this creature type before, but the fear cards, which are they're nightmares, which, again, that's something, there have been nightmares forever under creatures, but it's kind of like a cycle, it looks like, between fear of failed tests, although it's not even a cycle, because there's a bunch of them in blue.
I think they're really fun.
I think they're neat.
I think they're also really, really sick for getting, just thinking for limited, for getting Delirium online because they're enchantment creatures.
Oh, yeah. They're all enchantment creatures.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And so that helps to fuel card types and yards. I think that's like, that's the thing. It's like, there's so many things that like vaguely annoy me about this set, but like, also it is really, the design's really fun. Like, it's,
oh yeah, like I think gameplay wise, it, because we were talking about it last time, where I think Bloomborough for a lot of people felt like, not necessarily like entirely classic Simple Magic, but it had a like very clearly delineated, okay, here are all the different tribes that you're in. A lot of it's along tribal lines and kind of integrating that with like the duo cards. It felt like classic Magic with a twist. And this feels more modern, but it feels like breaking a lot of those kind of rules and conceptions.
It's definitely like, this is very much a contemporary Magic set, for better and worse. I think one of the biggest things that like Bloomborough had to its favor is that very few of the cards felt like they weren't immediately designed like for like with a limited environment first and foremost. Like, it did not feel like a very commander-centric-y set.
For sure.
And I think a lot of that had to do with the creature type synergies, where it's like, yeah, you can't really build a frogs commander deck yet. You can, but like you got to play like Chubtoad, you know?
Yeah, you're pulling from decades of whatever frogs you can find.
What do you feel about the common dual land cycle?
I think it's neat. I'm always a fan of dual lands, and the fact that it's not like, oh, you get one of these maybe every 2 to 3 packs is rad. I like that. Again, that like 13 or less life, I think the kind of flavor there is neat. I think in standard, in both standard and draft, like every 20 life format, I think that is like, that's awesome. Like, that's exactly what you need.
As the Pauper player, I'm salivating thinking about these. These are so good in Pauper. I'm also I'm looking at one of them right now, Etched Cornfield.
Oh yeah, like super, super fun.
Oh my, just like the art, the land, the background, like landscape design of Duskmourn is so fucking cool. And it
I wish... It's one of those things where I wish there was going back to it, I wish like we were going to spend more time here. Like, this is such a, in a way I don't think Thunder Junction was, but this is such a interesting plane to explore. And I think it has so much like rich potential there.
It seems really fun. I feel like I'm going to like this one. This like of the standard sets that have come out this year. Yeah, this is probably going to be like my second favorite set, but that's because, I mean, there's really not a lot of competition for that. I am starting to like Murders better with this set, just because there's a lot of face down creature synergies. But like, I'm like, okay, if we can make a cloak work as a thing, if we can make Secret Tunnel a viable land in standard, awesome. Just like if we can be boosting what feels like an otherwise very narrow design space that was a lot of Murders, I'd be really excited.
What do you think of, just really quick, going back to the actual card designs? I'm scrolling down to the bottom and getting the full art cards. What do you think of this kind of the dual tone yellow purple like full art cards they have? Because I kind of don't like them.
I like what they're trying to do with them. I am curious where these are going to be, like what packs these are going to be available in, because these are screaming collector booster only.
Oh yeah.
I don't think I'd love them in a limited or 60 card constructed environment, but if someone had built any of these as their face commander, I'd give them a big thumbs up. Kind of curious about the Wandering Rescuer art that like seems to be a foil. Like, if
that's, I know, I'm looking at that.
If that's how these play in foil, then I'm actually kind of obsessed.
Or even if it's just like not foil, but it still has that kind of rainbow effect.
Oh, that. if that's what that would be awesome too. Like, yeah, I think that they're really, really, really cool pieces of art. I don't know if they're harder to read than I'd like them to be, I think, is where I'm coming down on it.
I think I just the yellow and the purple, I don't really like as a, and some of them, yeah, like they are kind of, it's hard to tell kind of what's going on, like the Swarm Weaver.
I'm not super sold on them, except for Winter, Misanthropic Guide, and Zimone, all questioning. I do wish that we would get like less. I don't think we need this many treatments of cards, because we have the full art, we have the CRT frame, we have the yellow and purple art.
Well, and then all of those are going to be available in both foil and non-foil. And then,
of course,
I'm sure is there an etched variant coming too? Or if not etched in collector boosters, I'm sure there'll be a shock foil.
I don't buy collector booster packs very often.
I have to have actively like $30 to throw away, which is not very often.
Yeah, no, because I'll usually try to save money, like when a new set's coming out, like I'll be like, okay, and then we'll open one collector booster to see how it feels that I get like usually pretty early into its release.
Because you can get like, okay, these are cards you wanted, but they're you know, a fun version that you can play in standard and kind of show off, or maybe trade with other people. That's what I ended up doing.
Yeah, or like sometimes it's like, you know, if you're a couple weeks into it and it's like, oh, I would actually really love to get this rare or mythic. Like I'm not going to go out of my way to try to find this as a single, but it would be really cool if I cracked this and I'm going to try exactly once. Like I bought a Bloomborough collector booster a couple weeks ago and got a Marinar was in it. And I'm like, cool. I'm building a Rats deck now. Like,
It's hard to, if anybody doesn't watch, you know, I'm sure plenty of people who listen to this will watch Tolarian Community College, but if you ever watch the videos that they do there where they play what they call the booster pack game, which is to essentially, okay, they're going to open up one of those 12 pack boxes of collector boosters and see if what is actually in 12 packs is monetarily worth, you know, the $200 or up to, you know, in some of the other sets, $400. Yeah. That you were paying to get all of these. And with rare exception, it's like, no.
Yeah, you're not getting enough. You're rarely making a profit. If you're breaking even or just like a little bit, I'm like, if you have the kind of money to like throw around for this kind of product, like good for you. Magic's an expensive game, unfortunately. I would be interested in doing like booster box game type stuff, like a little bit further into a set's like standard life, because sometimes like the cards that are worth a lot, like
yeah,
cards
they don't know out of the gate,
right? Like
Urabrass
Forge.
Oh yeah, that's a great example.
Urabrass Forge was a fucking dollar until like 3 weeks ago.
I think Innkeeper's Talent from Bloomborough is one that's. It's like $25
yeah,
now.
That was like, people thought it was like good, but it was like, oh, this is like a $5 good card at set release. And now that, yeah, it's like 25 fucking bucks. Or I remember cracking a Fountain Port early on.
Oh yeah.
That's like a $6 land now. When I cracked it, it was going for like 50 cents. And so like, you know, some of these cards do go up in price, but then you have like, conversely, a lot of the chase mythics at the beginning of a set's life, it's like, yeah, that was a $15 card when the set dropped, but now it's $4, which, I mean, that ain't nothing, but that's a third of the price. And I hope, like, I feel bad for anyone who spent a ton of money on something, like, unless, you know, I guess it depends on like if you're thinking about like Magic as investment versus magic as just like expensive hobby and, you know, thing that makes you happy.
Far be it from me to say that, like, oh no, this is a bad investment, or like collectibles and reselling can't be a good investment.
Yeah.
But it is such an edge case. And
it's, I think that, you know, if you're cracking packs and you're wanting to like, okay, and if I had a really bad weekend, like if I had a really bad financial weekend and something happened and I needed to make like, if I needed like $500, could I resell everything that I have to make that? Yeah. But like having it be like a consistent, like livable income or like nest egg. No,
you're not sitting on, you know, a bunch of like black lotuses or something.
No. Like I, with very few exceptions, do I think that any contemporary card is going to reach like that level of price, short of like, I don't know, some copies of the One Ring might get up there eventually.
Yeah.
Which, Jesus Christ, they need to ban the One Ring in everything. I guess kind of while we're talking about like set design, how the cards feel, how like where Magic's going, like how do you feel about just like generically must have, like must play cards like the One Ring for like any given format?
Not great. I never like, I'm a big fan of the kind of, you know, an equity of ability contributing to how much it's something that as I'm getting a partner of mine into the game, I'm kind of faced with this idea of like, okay, she doesn't want to invest a whole lot of money in the game, right? And so yeah. I've let her go through my collection and go through and like pick and piece together, and I made her a commander deck for her birthday. But it's like, okay, it's still not, you know, like if she brings it to a commander night, it's not going to hang with like a deck somebody has put $200, $300 into, you know?
Oh, and that's on the cheaper side of things.
Oh, absolutely. Like when I actually look at like, okay, what is, I went and I looked into, cause I have a ton of Bloomborough stuff now. And yeah. So I'm basically, that's kind of what I'm relying on. I have some other stuff, but I'm basically relying on my Bloomborough bulk for like a standard deck. And I was looking up, okay, what is a like good standard deck? And, you know, of course there are websites out there that can tell you how much they are, but it's like, you know, it's like, okay, the best, the most optimal deck you can have right now in these colors, it's going to be like $300. And I'm like, that's too much for a format made to be pulled from $6 card packs, you know?
Yeah. And especially like, and it's rotating. And
exactly.
And that's not even touching like Eternal format deck prices, but like, no, I play a lot of standard on Arena, but I would love to play my Lizards in paper, but I,
well, and Arena, I don't know. I feel weird. Cause like Arena is like living vicariously where like I could get a Shouldred in Arena.
Yeah.
You know, there's a Shouldred at one of my local stores that I just saw yesterday. It's $80.
Yep.
And I'm like, in no way on my best, like I would feel irresponsible spending $80 on one card.
If I spent $80 on a single piece of cardboard, I can't even begin to imagine the circumstances that would have to come with that.
Like how just absolutely flush with cash you would have to be.
Yeah, no, but like, if you want to be playing Modern, I mean, I guess Shouldred's probably seeing a little bit less play now that with Grief being gone. I don't know what the black like controller hand hate decks are looking like, but I think Shouldred will at least drop a little bit in price once it rotates out of standard. But it's nuts. Even for like to put together my Lizards, like Vine Lashers, like $5 or $6 a pop. I need to get a couple more of those. I run two or three copies of Lumra in it that's a $12 card. Like, and while these aren't like, you know, that those are individually like much cheaper cards than something like a Shieldred.
But it still adds up.
But it really like, it really adds up. And even like the mana base in my list is pretty cheap because I run a bunch of Thunder Junction Deserts.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, like it's just, and then to see cards that like are just so generically good that just, what's the One Ring going for right now?
I think like low end, every time I see it in a store, it's like at least 90.
The lowest I'm seeing is 96. It used to only be $50 about a year ago. I don't really know what caused the pivot to like, oh no, you like everyone needs it. I mean, I guess part of it's like, you know, as supply became like lesser, it's a little bit harder to like, I don't know how many shops just happen to have boxes of Lord of the Rings.
I would say like overall, yeah, I'm not a fan of pretty much anything that, which is always going to be the case, right? Like it's a collectible game. It has been going on for 30 plus years. There are always going to be cards that are going to be, you know, worth so much money, even if it's not because of their utility, it because of their like inherent value as collector pieces, as just old cards.
Oh yeah.
That being said, like for example, I told you I got a sealed Urza Saga deck, and I'm staring at it right now. And like I got it for a pittance of what it should have been. I think it was an actual error on the TCG trader store that I got it from, because they had a whole bunch of other decks that were priced at like 120, which is kind of the like around the going rate I've seen for a lot of sealed Urza Saga stuff.
Yeah.
And I got mine for like 30 something. So I don't know why, because I've seen that this specific deck, it's completely sealed. I've checked it. It hasn't been opened or anything. Like it's just a sealed deck, but it also, as soon as it is opened, it does lose that value.
Yeah.
Like the cards, you can go basically make the deck with old cards for like $10, $15.
$5. Yeah.
Yeah. If that.
Yeah. And like, that's such a funny thing. Like how drastically sealed product like loses its value once it's in there. And like, Do you see the thing going on with the Pokemon market currently?
No, what's happening with Pokemon?
I'm curious if this will be able to impact Magic, but someone purchased like an MRI type machine, like an imaging machine, and they started putting sealed Pokemon product into it. And based on the way that those cards are foiled, you can tell what's in it.
Fascinating.
And it's so like you can tell it's like, oh yeah, this one's got a Gengar in it. That's pretty good. And that's like, you know, obliterating the collector's market from it, because like concealed products, like, you know, it's Schrodinger's box. Like it has,
and like the point of having, like if you go and look at like go look at old like sealed packs of Magic, of like Chronicles or some shit. And it's like the point is that you might get something fucking crazy.
This might have a duel. This might have this could have a Lotus.
Yeah, this could have like a Gaia's Cradle or something.
Right.
There are booster packs. One of my local stores has Kaladesh booster packs that they are charging $26 for. For a booster, like not even a collector, just a booster.
What was
it's like? I know if somebody opens that, that's not $26 of cards.
What was good in Kaladesh? That's
I don't even know. I've been every now and then I need to like go and look up all the Kaladesh cards on Scryfall, because is there something that's just like you win the game? Like what is the $26 price tag?
There's the reprint list, right?
Like okay.
Yeah, duh. Sorry.
It's the same problem. It's the problem I have with collector packs, where I don't think every time I open a collector pack and I pick through like 7 foil commons, I'm like, there should not be any commons in this. Like, there should not be any commons or tokens. Like, you should maybe have, like, half of it be uncommons and the rest be rares, and then maybe, like, one or two mythics in there.
Yeah.
But it's like, if you were to open a Kaladesh pack, like, 90% of it is going to, like, go straight into your bulk.
Oh, yeah.
And it's that perceived value of, like, it could. You know, it was like what you were saying. It's that infamous... The opening of the pack, that the last card was the Black Lotus. Everybody's seen that clip of the dude, like, his hand shaking when he opens a fucking alpha Black Lotus. And it's like, everybody wants that to happen, but it statistically, it's just not gonna. Like we are thankfully not at a point, and not saying that under Hasbro, Wizards won't do this at some point, but we are thankfully not at a point where, like, they are yet locking crazy cards behind collector boosters. Like, there are some, you have a higher chance to get alternate cards. Like, you can get cards that you can't necessarily get, but it's not like, okay, here is a standard legal card. Like, if they only put, say, its name in a collector booster or something, you know?
Yeah, that would be so funny. Oh my God. And I mean, like, you do kind of run into that. Like, occasionally there are certain like chase commons and uncommons that are, like, easier to get in collector boosters, but yeah, no, like, thankfully it's not like, oh yeah, in a collector booster we found an old crate of alpha and we're just sliding them into a slot.
Oh my God.
you know they would do some shit like that.
They it would probably be worse than that, though. It'd probably be like they'd sell it, you know, for... What was the 30th anniversary thing where they sold a bunch of, it was non-legal shit, and it was like, here's a Black Lotus and this, that, and the other for like a couple $100 or something?
Okay, so it's so much worse than that.
Is it because they were proxies, basically?
So they were, you could buy a box that had four packs that were the same pack design as, like, alpha. So, like, the same, you know, it would be, you've got your commons, your uncommons, your rare, your land. It was, so, like, it was, you know, traditionally, like, slotted cards, small box of four of those. They're all proxies, they all have illegal backs for $1,000.
That is just a oh, that's so
60 pieces of illegitimate cardboard.
Like, as, okay, if you want to put that out as, like, here's a commemorative thing for, like, $40, $30. Like, $30, oh, I think, is a sweet spot for that.
That $40, that fine. Four packs of cool alpha proxies for $30. Yeah.
Like, and it's a fun, here's a, you know, good, and that's what that kind of shit should be. It should be for a celebration, like, of a legacy.
Yeah, no, like, those are just cute and fun for, like, because then you can, like, $30, you get three packs, you can draft with that.
Like that, and that's something that is, it's the thing that actually is kind of pissing me off with Mystery Booster 2 right now, where it's like, that is not a widely available thing at all. Like, you can, basically your only chance to get those anymore for now is to get the whole festival in a box for like $220. And I've heard nothing but great things about this product. This thing that, like, pays homage to, you know, the entirety of kind of Magic history, and there's this time spiral stuff, and there are these, like, the fake beta cards and stuff. Like, I want to like get in there and feel around for that stuff, but it's just prohibitively expensive.
So bad.
I know. I like, why is that not at, like, an LGS?
I couldn't tell you, because I don't think that that's going to, like, I don't think that's going to sell event tickets nearly, like, I don't think there aren't enough players who are that enfranchised. I mean, like, Cards on the Table, one of my partners and I did, like, seriously consider, okay, do we, like, go halvesies on a festival in a box, and then we get a couple of drafts out of that? But
I was kind of looking at it, because I'm like, what other chance am I going to have to play this?
It does pay for itself, probably. But, like,
it's also $200.
Like, it's $200. And I mean, like, granted, we're also planning, like, probably sometime end of this month, early next month, we're going to try to get a draft box of Commander Masters, because I want to do a Commander draft. I want to put together a 4-person pod and draft Commander as like a late birthday party.
Oh, hell yeah.
I feel like I'm actively being hypocritical for being like, I don't want to spend $200 on that, but I might spend $200 on that. But like, it's, I guess for me, it's the restriction of it. Like, it's, I'm more than ambiently considering doing a Commander draft, because that sounds fun and I can just log on to TCG Player and make it happen. I can't even begin to consider that with mystery boosters.
Well, and the thing with mystery is like, you can't even really buy those packs anywhere, because everybody who's played them, it's been at events and stuff, and everybody right. who's played them has opened the card. So you can't, like, there are no even packs to buy, which would be, you know, ridiculously expensive if they made them to eBay, I'm sure. But like,
oh, I can only imagine what someone's going to be charged. Like, someone absolutely got a festival in a box and is going to be reselling each of those packs for $25.
Oh, if not more, honestly. Like, this ties in directly, I feel, to what we were like just talking. We've kind of veered off course on from Duskmourne, but I think it ties in with a lot of people's problems with just the aesthetics of modern Magic, or the aesthetic rotation of modern yeah. Magic being so kind of, I don't want to say slapdash, I feel
it feels, might
make people think it's lazy, but it's all over the place.
Scattershot, I think, is
scattershot.
Maybe,
that's a better way to put it.
I'm frustrated with it, because it's like, I would love for the game to just like retain a more cohesive identity. And on the one hand, I think it's cool that like, if like, due to the variety of different like art designs and art styles the game's gone through like recently, if that's like getting more new players into the game, that's really fun. But like, I still would like to have a consistent identity for the game kind of as a whole. Like, part of the fun of it is you get to, my favorite thing about Magic is that like, you have access to 30 years of this game. Like, I don't know many other hobbies that have like that depth and breadth.
Certainly not like entrenched in, like not in a way that an entire community has kind of grown up and felt together. Like yeah. there are people like, who will commiserate about like, you know, oh my gosh, remember original Kamigawa, remember original, you know, Ravnica, or like whatever. Like,
there
is such a rich tapestry of, you know, people have made friendships, they've lost friends, they've met loved ones, playing, going to their local game stores, spending dozens upon dozens of hours in those stores, making friends, getting to know people. Like, it is a product, the reasons that it means more to people have to do with how they've come together over it.
Yeah, no, it's like you can spend $50 on Magic cards and get that purchase, like hundreds upon hundreds of hours of enjoyment and shared memories, and yeah, like making new friendships, finding like cool and exciting people. Just like it gets you out of the house. It gets you, like, speaking from personal experience, like my life has gotten so much better because I play Magic, just due to like, oh, cool. Yeah. Oh, you play Magic? Cool. Yeah. Come over on Friday. We're gonna jam a game and then go like out bar hopping or something. I met one of my partners at that Pauper draft that I mentioned earlier, like inadvertently. That was the first time we met, and she thought, like, we both thought each other was kind of like, we're like, eh, I'm gonna start that story over, but like we both thought each other was hot, but like didn't get partnered up with each other, so we didn't like do much about it, but it was like, oh, by the way, like, she thinks you're really cool and y'all should hang sometime. And I'm like, hell yeah. Or God, like the amount of internet community that I've found with this. Cause like when I played Magic,
I think that's pretty much how we started talking.
Yeah. Cause I think I got you back into Magic.
Yeah, you basically did.
Which is cool as shit. Like, I straight up, I woke up one morning in like 2023 with the thought, I should go buy a pack of magic cards. This is going to be an event that changes my life. I'm not entirely sure why. I walked over to Target and I think the first, because like I played in high school, but like I didn't own cards. I was broke as shit and just borrowed friends' decks and we'd play during like cross country meets. But the first pack of magic cards I owned was one of those weird theme packs for New Capenna.
Oh, yeah. Oh, theme boosters.
Yeah, which are not good.
No, it's a bunch of commons of one, maybe two colors.
Yeah. But I'm like, these are neat. I don't know what Connives is, but I like saying it as a trigger. That's nice. And then from there, just kind of going like, yeah, you know what? This game seems kind of funny. And I've met so many brilliant and wonderful and amazing people through playing this funny game.
Like, I think similarly, I've found there, I have a really great, it's not my commander group. I kind of came into it. But one of the local game stores is, I mean, like anybody out there who's been to multiple local shops kind of knows the shop around you that I'm talking about. Cause I think everybody has it where it's a lot of cis straight white dudes. It's a lot of like, not that they're rude or mean or exclusionary at all, but it's a bunch of cis straight white dudes.
It's the type of guy that you think plays Magic.
Exactly. Like 100%. And they're very nice. They range in levels of like social politeness, but like I've always had a good time there. But there is another store that I decided to, I just saw that they had a commander night and went, and it's an entirely queer, almost as exclusively queer group of people that as soon as I came in, they asked my pronouns and they've been super chill. And we're gonna like second time I joined them, they were like, hey, do you want to come grab drinks with us after? And like, it is a game that just brings people together and you kind of just find your group the more you play.
Yeah, no, like, oh my God, one of the stores near me, like has a very similar vibe to the second store that you described, where it's like you go in and it's just like, you walk into a room, there's 15 people and 25 pronouns. And I love that. Like the thing that like kept me in the game, like when I first came back, I'm like, oh, there's so many cool trans women who play Magic. Okay, fine. I'll stick around. And they're all being very nice to me and sending me deck lists and are like, hey, do you know about this card? Because
it's the like shared autistic special interest that you are also just have the same special interest.
Oh my God. It is so fun. I mean, I entirely understand, like, you know, now that I'm in their shoes. If someone gets into Magic for the first time, it's like, hey, look at this card. Look at how neat it is. And it's like, it's not even like a crazy combo piece or something. It's just like, hey, look at this rat. Yeah. Like this thing's just cool.
Look at this goofy little fella.
Yeah. Look at this big beefy dragon. It costs 8 mana. You're never going to cast this thing, but look at it. And then, you know, oh my God, I love casting cards that are like as old as I am.
Oh yeah, that's the wildest shit is as I've been going back to, like I said, Ice Age and all these other like vintage sets and not alpha, not beta, but the third set where they basically reprinted a ton of like those cards. Because I have a couple Dark Writs from there and I have a couple like other like Death Lace or whatever. And going back and seeing the mark of like copyright 1994, like holding something in my hand that is like a year older than I am.
Yeah. It's nuts.
Surreal. It's so strange.
It's so fun. Oh my God.
I guess actually kind of speaking of trans women and Magic, actually almost springboards perfectly into a second topic for the week, which is the CEDH changes.
Yeah, I was just about to use that segue because, oh, the CEDH Rules Committee. Oh my God. This has been an incredibly... So we're recording this. We're recording this on a Wednesday. All of yesterday, all of Tuesday was a menagerie of emotions for anyone who's even like adjacent or like lightly adjacent to the CEDH community. If you'd like me to kind of get us into it, if you'd like to get us into it.
Yeah, if you, I have been trying to kind of wrap my head around this, but I feel I am not, outside of like going to Commander events and stuff, I am not nearly as into like the rules and regulations and governing bodies as I think you are knowledgeable of. So like, please take it away.
I'm going to do a lot of groundwork and I'm going to try to be as like clear and concise as possible.
Go for it.
So for Commander as an entity, for EDH as an entity, there is the Rules Committee and the Commander Advisory Group. And these are a pair of volunteer-run organizations that kind of keep a finger on the pulse of the community, make sure that like no cards are getting like weirdly problematic and like impacting the game in negative ways, and otherwise like try to keep this, you know, community-run format that like, you know, Wizards is printing cards for it, but there's not like it's only kind of semi-official. Like it's this group of folks that just want to make Commander be a cool space to play Magic and like especially a welcoming space to play Magic. Like there's a really, really strong internal push to encourage a diverse player base, making sure that like everyone feels welcome, very much like centering the gathering part of Magic the Gathering. Mm-hmm. And so that's just kind of, that's Commander writ large. And over the course of Commander's life, they've banned a handful of cards that like, yeah, I agree, probably would be really, really, really not great to have in Commander, just because they'd kind of, I think they're funny cards that, yeah, I'm fine with my opponents not casting these, even though it means I don't get to cast them. And so kind of with those bannings and stipulations, that like leads to a lot of diverse deck construction, which gets us into the formation of CEDH or Competitive Commander, effectively. And so this is a less of a divergent kind of sub-format and more of a, we're going to have a rule zero conversation happen for us. If I say I'm playing a CEDH deck, you know exactly what that means. That means it's going to go turbo hard, turbo fast. I am optimizing this deck to win. I'm playing this effectively like I would a Legacy deck. And I think that's cool. I think that's great. Some friends and I have started getting into CEDH a little bit, and I intentionally am trying to build something that's a goofy off-meta thing that's neither here nor there. But this runs into some issues on a couple of fronts where cards that are banned in Commander, that are banned in EDH, or additionally some cards that are legal in EDH, function much differently at the power level of a CEDH table. And I think a good example for this is Ancestral Recall versus Rhystic Study. So Ancestral Recall is the one blue pip, draw three cards, not so but so card. Versus Rhystic Study, it's a three mana enchantment. It comes down every time someone casts a spell. It's Rhystic Study. Do you pay the one? And at a usual Commander table, Ancestral Recall is going to give someone a huge boost in card advantage very fast. Whereas Rhystic Study is going to take a little bit of time to get online. Most people are only casting like one or two spells per turn anyway, and therefore have mana up to pay the one. You can be very responsible. I was at a CEDH table the other day. Rhystic Study resolved on the turn before me. by the time it got back to that player's turn, they had drawn 18 cards.
Right. Yep. Fantastic.
And so I can see why someone might want that banned for this format, but not that format. And so you kind of get into this bigger discussion of, like, should there be a rules committee or other governing body for CEDH, especially that would allow for facilitating tournament play and kind of like standardizing what a competitive Magic scene is. And like, the Commander Rules Committee has said that they aren't really looking to infringe or impede too much on the CEDH space. Like, they've banned one or two cards that were mostly just causing problems in CEDH. I know they banned Flash a little bit ago, because Flash Hulk decks were getting disgusting. It's always Simic. It's always fucking Simic.
You were right. You said it's like, it's just too powerful.
Green and blue should never be allowed to be in the same deck.
Okay, but what about green, blue, black?
Why not blue, red, black, though?
What if green, blue, black, so I have access to all the spells and the mana and then can kill everything? That sounds like fun for me.
That could be fun. That could be fun. Okay. Soul Ties may be on the menu. Simic banned. And so enter yesterday, a quartet of strapping lads declared themselves the CEDH Rules Committee. And, my God. On the one hand, I get like the kind of why, and I think that a lot of their choices in the last 24 hours can be more attributed to an excitement for the format and an excitement to like try to usher in like the next stage of this format that they really like. And also, like, they rushed into a bunch of shit while being four straight cis men that are saying that like they're the governing body of Commander, and we're gonna get to the
okay yeah.
It was like kind of an optics thing. And it's like, you know, there's a lot of not that genre of person who plays CDH competitively, like in streams, in live events, and places very highly. And like, did you talk to any of them about maybe being like, especially on launch, like if you're going to be the governing body of a community, you should probably be representative of the community, right? Like that just seems like a very easy pitfall to avoid, especially because this is also, this is the thing that I haven't seen a lot of people talking about for this that I think is like really baffling. CEDH sprung out of Commander, the format that wants to be for everyone. So therefore, you're going to have everyone being exposed to CEDH and maybe wanting to give that a try. In my local CEDH pod, we don't have any cis people.
I mean, like, same. We were just talking about like a primarily queer group of Commander players that I go with, I like almost every week for the last, I missed last week, but like I had a friend come visit me from Jersey, and they stayed with me for a week, and I brought them to Commander Night, and they just fit in perfectly there because like it's what we were just talking about. There is this community that is grown so much in 30 years that of course it means a bunch to people, and like they should be represented.
They should be represented, and they should, like, especially if this is if part of this committee's main goal is to facilitate like a healthy tournament scene, these tournaments should be healthy for all players. Like, these tournaments should feel like safe places for all players to enter into to throw down, because like that just seems like it's the prospect of turning any sort of commander offshoot into turbo like boys club thing. And I don't want to say that that was necessarily their intent or hope for the this committee or community long term.
Yeah, I think it I think it was
this very much feels like a group of dudes who had a plan, and many such cases of terrible things have come out of that kind of a setup. But then we get to the events. So they launch early yesterday morning. They launch like a website, a Twitter, a Discord, a bunch of shit, and kind of it's like who they are, what they're about, what they're going to try to go for the format. Like the reason why I brought up the Rhystic set, like Rhystic study verse Ancestral Recall, is because they are thinking about not only like they're thinking about CEDH specific bannings and unbannings that would help with what they think is the health of the format. And Rhystic study was like very directly something that they wanted to put on the chopping block. And I do understand that to some extent. And so they kind of laid out this roadmap of what they want the next couple of months to look like for them, what their goals and focuses are. Then Twitter started happening because many people, many Magic the Gathering players asked the question, where are the women? Where are the people of color? Are you fucking serious?
Well, I mean, the Nazi was there, has been there, apparently.
The Nazi has been there. Asterisk. He was not. So this is one thing that like I do care a lot about covering this story correctly. He right. was not one of the committee members. He was closely affiliated with several of them, but he would not have been on the governing body. And I do think that that's like very important to note, just in the event that like this potential RC starts moving forward. If you have a Nazi in the room, but he's not speaking, do you have a room full of Nazis? Probably. But like, I don't want to, it's such a weird situation because like what happens is this this dipshit starts opening his fucking mouth and talking about how they shouldn't have like diversity inclusion on the committee team, and it should all be like proven through like your merit on the battleground, Frank, like type shit. And everyone's like, okay, but like bro, we have plenty of players that you could have approached for this. Turns out that like, so he's this dude was like the owner, I think, and like lead developer of topdeck.gg, which is like tournament organizing software that a lot of tournament organizers use to keep like everything rolling. And it's like, okay, well, that had already like rebranded because of like this dude's kind of like known dipshittery. And it's, I don't feel great that this is the kind of guy that seemed to be pretty adjacent to a potential governing body of a format that kind of prides itself on inclusion.
Most certainly not. No, it's real bad. And of the things I've seen people come out and talk about, it seems like that stuff is kind of being skated over. I didn't really see anybody addressing, like within the CEDH Discord or anything, addressing the thread that's going around talking about this person very closely associated with it. And the like, and when people say Nazi ties, this is not just a,
this isn't like some edgelord case person. Like
it's somebody who's like popping off 1488 type shit.
Yeah. It's this isn't like an, oh, he did an oopsie poopsie one time. It's like, he's actively following or was actively following multiple, Holocaust denial, meme accounts on Twitter. He was following fucking like Nick Fuentes and retweeting this shit. And I'm saying all this in the past tense because this motherfucker nuked his account. Like,
oh yeah, like as soon as he was called out on it, like account gone. This account's unavailable.
Yeah.
Certainly the way to dissuade like any suspicion.
Yeah. And it's like I just don't really know what to do with this on several fronts, because I'm not even entirely sure that like CEDH needs its own like governing body. I don't know why. I certainly don't think it needs to have its own governing body that like fully just replicates what the Commander Rules Committee is. Like not even addressing the, and then the safety concerns of it all. It's like, okay, and if we're going to be doing this, who's going to be doing this? How are they going to be selected? Like, I didn't ask for any of these guys to start dictating one of my formats. Like,
yeah, I guess I don't understand the reason why it was needed in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, because I like, for me at least, part of the fun of CEDH is seeing how fucked up of a deck can I build under the restrictions of Commander. Like that should just that. We don't need to go any further than that, because as soon as you start incorporating like alternative ban lists, like at what point are they enforced? Who are they enforced by? How are they being enforced? Like, you know, there's no hard line as to like what deck is a CEDH deck.
I mean, it's also like this is not they are not affiliated with Wizards in any way. So it's not like, you know, if you go to like a local store and they're like, okay, can I use proxies? And they're like, no, because it's like an official Wizards event or whatever, even if it's just casual play. But nobody's store owners. Yeah. Like, what are they going to be like? Oh no, the CEDH council has judged it. So.
Yeah. Well, cause one of the committee members is a tournament organizer. Which also to me feels like a conflict of interest.
A little bit.
Yeah. But like, I don't know. I'm just thinking, okay, so if you build a CEDH deck that's like primed to that banned list and not Commanders, or like at what point do you have to like transition? When do you have to like swap cards out or you're able to put cards in from like one deck to another, if it's just like, oh yeah, this is like my 9.5 Jota the Unifier? Like, at what point is that just CEDH? And then you need to like adhere to a totally different ban list. And like, if you're going to like, because Wizards does, you know, they do support like Commander events. Like, this is a recognized format. Like, it's not
is this group going to be recognized by Wizards?
I doubt it. And it's just fucking clown shoes. It's clown shoes all the way down. Again, to like fully miss the mark of like, if you're going to be representative of a community, how come you're not representative of a community?
Like you said at the beginning, it seems less like out of malice than it is just kind of
four dumb guys were dumb
beating ahead. Like, yeah.
It's like, yeah, but then like really, hold on. Let me find the tweet, because I think this kind of sums up my thoughts on this, like across the board. Patrick Sullivan, as usual, hit the nail on the head. If my rollout got completely derailed because one of my members was a forward-facing Nazi, I would take some inspiration from the format itself. Take that free mulligan.
Yeah, like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Maybe, okay, hey, I guess they have their Discord set up. They have, like, some kind of structure, I guess, in mind, but maybe just, like, let's open enrollment or register. Like, let's have somebody, a couple other people come in, let's start over, fresh slate,
yeah,
before moving forward.
just like, oh, we're expanding this. Because in their initial rollout, they were like, oh, we're looking to add like two more people, but didn't really stipulate what that was. Like, I think just, yeah, like some forward facing, like community engagement could work wonders if they want to be taken seriously. Otherwise, this is just like a bunch of fancy lads running around.
Yeah. And at what point, like, it seems like such a recipe for disaster, because it's like, what's to stop egos from getting in the way of this? What's to stop, you know, splinter factions from developing in this thing that ultimately, like, kind of doesn't even matter, but it's,
well, like,
positioning itself as some kind of authoritative body?
I mean, I think the big thing is they're at the whims of the community to be adopted as an authoritative body.
Yeah, like, it is.
This is, like...
That's actually a really great way to put it.
Like, so sell yourself to me on this. Like, why should I think that you should have a say in this? It's, like, where I'm coming from. Because, like, the issue with so many... There are so many Commander variant formats where it's, like, it's Commander, but it's this restriction. That just... not entirely die, but like certainly become much smaller than they could have been, because like they didn't have like the community adoption aspect. Like I'm thinking about like Tiny Leaders or Oathbreaker. Like,
oh yeah, Tiny Leaders, yeah,
fucking Tiny Leaders, right? Like, this, they might as well have just declared themselves the fancy lads of Tiny Leader Bay, like. Because that's the same fucking, like, locus of power.
I don't even know what else needs to be said. Like, it's just, it's silly. It's so silly.
It's so deeply silly. It's so deeply unnecessary.
Excessively silly for a game that is already quite silly.
Right. I mean, and that's, like, the thing for me is, like, Commander... is the most deeply unserious way to play Magic.
Yeah.
Like, why are you trying to make serious the deeply unserious? Like, here are your clown shoes. Here's your funny little red nose.
Go play Unfinity.
Go open an attraction.
Go visit three attractions in a turn. That's like a great example. It's like, I played in the kind of more queer group, somebody made a like bizarre artifact Unfinity attraction deck where like every turn was popping out new enchantments or just visiting attractions and getting all of these like ticks and pings off of it. It's just like, that's the kind of fun, weird shit that you go to that format to see.
Literally. Just before we got on this call, I was watching a video about someone's Norrin the Wary stickers deck.
Oh, stickers.
And
right, yeah.
And go for it. Yeah, it's fucking Commander. Like, and no, and if you want to be running like Turbo Rog'Sai and just like killing people on turn one off a Thoracle combo, there's space for that in the format too. Like, I don't think CEDH needs its own ban list just because like it can
get a little goofy sometimes.
Just be a little goofy. Just like, no, we're all playing this thing together and I don't know. It's
very silly, but we will, I guess, have to see how it shakes out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they didn't delete all of the accounts, just that one dude deleted his, so I think they're still like moving forward with the project, and I guess this is CEDH watch.
Good luck, I guess.
If you expel the Nazis, add women, and guarantee that you use deodorant, I might be interested in you as the governing body.
But otherwise, there's really no reason to
just
do. Yeah.
Until proven otherwise, you're the fancy lads of Tiny Leader Bay.
I think that about does it though for our week, unless you have anything else to add.
No, I think after this, I'm going to start trying to put together a Canadian Highlander deck for the first time.
Perfect. I need to sit down and actually put together, I have designs on a all color, like Barbarian Warrior deck. Going to be loosely like Kaldheim/Cold Snap/Ice Age themed. So
obsessed.
I'm very excited to get it going. But yeah, thank you all so much for joining us this week. And we hope you all enjoyed this technically first episode of Podatog. And we will see you all next time.
See you again soon. Pass the turn.
Oh, I love pass the turn. That's cute. Oh, I'm keeping that in. That's adorable.
Yeah, that's
inspired. I love that.
That's got to be the sign off.